This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The Eighth Amendment gives convicted inmates a constitutional right to adequate health care. Those privileges end when inmates are released. So what does that mean for the chronic illnesses or people with chronic illnesses who need ongoing treatment? How do the mentally ill remain stable without support? Evan Ashkin's a professor of family medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and regional medical director of Community Care of North Carolina. And he noticed a gap in health coverage and was inspired to launch the Formerly Incarcerated Transition Program, also known as FIT. And he joins us now. Evan Ashkin, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. Glad to be here.
Tell us about the gap that you found in healthcare as people come out. What are we looking at here?
One of the places I see patients is a community health center in Prospect Hill run by Piedmont Health Services, the federally qualified health center. And I was seeing folks who had large gaps in care. And over time, people usually don't tell you they have a history of incarceration because, rightly so, they've been discriminated against if they tell you that. But it would come out, hopefully, over time to develop some trust and realize that many of my patients who had significant medical problems had come out of incarceration and not been connected to health care. And as a result, were suffering some significant complications of what I thought were preventable parts of their disease. So got interested in looking into whether we could do better in connecting people.
And the rightly so part of your narrative was that they are rightly reticent to tell you, given the experience they've had of discrimination. So what do you mean by a gap? They're at the clinic, so they're there now. When you say a gap, what is it you're seeing?
Sure. So a lot of folks, it had been a year, even 2 years, since they had gotten any health care. And what happened oftentimes was a family member, concerned aunt, after they were doing poorly and getting sick, maybe been to the emergency room, would finally get them into the clinic because folks had very little resources, and even our small sliding scale fee was too much of a barrier to getting into care.
All right. And then as you probed this, you found that a huge proportion of these people were, in fact, had been incarcerated, and that accounted for this 2 or 3 years between their release and now when they finally come to see you.
That's right. And, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of folks, the first health care they had gotten was in prison. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks were previously uninsured and did not know anything about their disease. So also their health literacy was very low. So when they got out, they also didn't know much about their disease. So they didn't know how important it was to get into health care.
And what impact does this have on society at large? We can see clearly what impact it might have on them. But what about in terms of public health in general and the public in general?
Yeah, so it's obviously very hard for someone to be successful coming out of incarceration if they don't get health care. They need many other services as well, including housing, jobs, schools. So, you know, having good reentry support is very important, and it's so important to our society. You know, 95% of people in prison will come back to the community. And in North Carolina, that's actually last year almost 25,000 people came back to the community from North Carolina state prisons. So, and we're all invested in people becoming happy and productive members of society, and that is a much less expensive alternative to going back into incarceration. Healthcare is one of those things. And what I saw with a number of my patients is they had enormous medical bills from the complications of their problems. And one of the patients that got me the most interested, when he finally came in with diabetes, poorly controlled hypertension, kidney failure, he wound up on temporary dialysis. He had amputations, numerous hospitalizations. And I'm sure his medical bill was probably by the end easily around $250,000. And many of that could have been prevented if he had simple primary
and
care.
Does this gap include mental health as well?
It does, and sadly, even probably more so. The failure of our mental health system to be able to provide care is not just for people coming out of prison, but in general, probably now 20% of people incarcerated have significant mental illness in North Carolina. Many of those folks don't get services when they come out, and that includes substance use disorder, which may be present in 40 to 50% of people who are incarcerated.
So tell us about FIT and how this, you should pardon the expression, fits into this problem.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to find an organization called the Transition Clinic Network that had developed the model that we've adopted in North Carolina. And What they do is they say, hey, let's have a community health worker, a peer navigator, someone who themselves has a personal history of incarceration so that they can create rapport and trust with folks who are coming out. And so we were very fortunate to get some initial funding from the North Carolina Department of Health and then a Duke Endowment grant to hire community health worker in Durham County and now in Orange County, people who have that history, who've been able to connect with folks as they come out, gain that trust, and then we have vouchers to actually help pay for that sliding scale fee at the clinic and for medications. So we've been able to get folks directly into care and be able to support their medications, and some of those folks are really doing a lot better after they had struggled quite a bit.
Well, let's see how much better. I'm talking to Evan Ashkin. He's a professor of family medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and director of the Formerly Incarcerated Transition Program. And joining us now is Jessica Romine. She is a FIT program. She's been in the FIT program. In fact, is in the FIT program now. Got involved when she was released from jail. Jessica, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
Also with us, Tommy Green, who works with Orange County Health Department, and he's Jessica's community health worker at FIT. Hello, Tommy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Jessica, tell us about, you've had some trouble with the law. Obviously, you were incarcerated for a time. What were the challenges? What were the challenges for you when you got out?
Healthcare. That was the big challenge. having that support, I do not have parents, and Tommy has been my peer mentor and has helped me, resources, advocating for me.
So when you got, how did you find out about the program, and what were your needs coming out? I mean, what did he help you do?
So I found out about the program through CEF, which is Community Empowerment Funding in Chapel Hill, and she gave me Tommy's card, and I was a little nervous about talking to Tommy because it was something that I wanted to put in my past. So I called him. We've been working together. He set me up with Dr. Ashkins. Not only is he my primary health doctor, but he's also my pregnancy doctor, helping me with my prenatal stuff.
And so what do you think you would have done otherwise?
I really don't know.
And you're pregnant now?
I am, 3 months.
So this is, so obviously getting prenatal care is something that's pretty important to you.
Very important.
Do you think you would have, I mean, what would you have done otherwise? Would you have sought out that kind of care? That stuff is not, I mean, it's not easily available, and it's not something you necessarily know about. You know about having the baby, but prenatal care, was that something Tommy helped you with?
Something, yeah, he helped me with that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, too. Evan, let me ask you, you know, about those sort of things. I mean, again, prenatal care is something that we don't do very well in this country. We don't do it as well as it's available. It's out there. But you got to know about it, and you got to know how important it is. And we're not always – there seems to be a gap in sort of that kind of education. This would be a helpful program in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, for women, obviously, who are of childbearing age, getting into health services early and before pregnancy is very important as well, so that they have a much higher likelihood of having a healthy, normal pregnancy, not having preterm labor. And we're very happy to be able to provide prenatal care as part of the FIT program for our clients who are pregnant.
Well, Tommy, let me ask you about your involvement in the program. Why did you get involved in the first place?
Well, I'm actually a justice involved individual myself, which means, you know, I have a criminal background. I was incarcerated myself from 2003 to 2015. And after my release, you know, I had a lot of support, mostly from my parents. And, you know, I got my life back together to the point where, you know, I had made it all the way to assistant operations manager of a company that sold for $20 million just this year. So when this opportunity was presented to me to do this type of work and to work with this type of population, the first thing that popped in my head was, you know, I feel like I myself was the quintessential person that needed a second chance and needed support or whatever. So what I was thinking was I could be that person for the next person that my parents and whoever else my supporting cast was. So therefore, you know, I just really felt like to just to be that extra person for them, basically.
It's interesting because in your situation, you kind of don't know what you don't know, right? You said right. You had a lot of support and you were able to make your way through and get your life back together. Were you aware of how difficult it was for other people without your kind of support?
Yes, definitely. Not only inside and outside, I see I ran into a lot of situations where the individual had no support at all while they were there, which is already hard because, of course, prison is a very traumatic place to be. And, by me being in there with them and seeing the challenges that they had to overcome on their own, you know, kind of opened my eyes to that. And then once I was released, you know, I saw individuals come home and not have no type of support. And I seen the struggles that they had to overcome. And myself, even with support, you know, I still had major hurdles to go across. And I thank God, of course, for my support system and cast or whatever. But at the same time, I really realized that it's hard to do it by yourself. It's hard to not have someone just to do the simple things, like encourage you to keep going when you run into an obstacle, like jobs, for instance. You know, when you have when you're a convicted felon, you know, the first thing that all jobs do really nowadays is a background check. And once that background check comes back and, you know, when it comes to getting a job, that's your likelihood. I mean, that's your livelihood. You know, everything depends on you being able to provide for yourself. So when you get turned down for your only chance at a good life simply because of a mistake you made, like in my situation, over a decade ago. You know, it's really hard to take that. And sometimes you just need someone to just tell you, you know what, you'll get the next one. You know, that encouraging word.
Well, it's interesting, Jessica, because we're here talking about providing medical services and a navigator to help people work their way through a pretty complicated system. But it sounds like Tommy's doing a lot more for you than that.
Yes. We come up with goals and a plan. I call Tommy weekly, if not twice a week, just to let him know where I am, things that I want to work on. He actually told me a couple weeks ago that he was proud of me and that I'm one of his clients that actually have a pathway created for myself for goals that I want to accomplish and things that I want to do.
Well, tell us about those. You're working, right?
I am working. I have a great job. I work at Brugger's Bagels at East Franklin, and the GM actually came into the store and wanted to give me a better position and a raise, but because of my criminal background, that put some barriers up. I got affiliated with UNC. We're going to try to get some things expunged off my record.
Yeah. So, and Tommy, how much of a learning curve was this for you? Because you talked about wanting to do it and understanding the importance of it, but you've got to learn how to do this, right?
Right.
What's the job involved in terms of what you have to know?
To be honest with you, the learning curve for me was extensive. You know, my experience and my experience in human resources, not human services. And this is more of a human services position, not to mention the medical aspect of it for me was kind of challenging because, you know, I tell people all the time, like just the acronyms alone, learning those were a challenge. You know, I tip my hat to physicians and whoever else in the medical clinic and stuff that we work with, just to be able to keep up with that alone was a challenge, or just to learn all those things were a challenge. But again, as far as the personal experience and being a peer support for other people, that part came a little bit more natural because, again, you know, I have that background. I've been where Jessica has been. You know, I just, again, had a little bit more resource than Jessica did. But, again, I still was in her position, so I could relate to that. But the medical part, again, was the roughest part.
Well, Evan, talk about this in terms of if you were thinking about replicating this or scaling it up, what are you looking for in terms of qualifications with navigators, for instance?
So our number one quality we're looking for is really Tommy has expressed that beautifully. It's just that desire to help and that he has been there. So the number one qualification is you've been there, you have that history, and you've proven that you can be successful, and then you have a strong desire to help other folks. And we get a lot of support from this transition clinic network that actually has community health workers around the country. There are 25 other programs now like this. And so Tommy has this peer group of people doing this work, and actually they were all together out in the Bay Area recently, exchanging stories, learning together. They actually do trainings together. So there's quite a bit of support to help folks doing this work.
What about the, you know, you're working at these at clinics, and we're talking about the public health system and network in America, and it's already stuffed, right? It's already overflowing in a way and beyond capacity in some ways. You're talking about doing something right, helping people who have not had services. What would that mean about what we would need to do with our public health system in order to do it right, to give proper treatment to people coming out of prison?
Yeah, so, you know, as I mentioned, just in North Carolina alone, it's 25,000 people. In the U.S., I think last year there were almost 790,000 people released from prisons. That doesn't include jail. To get people, those folks into services, especially with mental health and substance use disorder, I mean, there needs to be significant scaling upwards of these services. And happily, there are grants from the federal government that are helping some states. And North Carolina actually has been a recipient of some of that funding, more from mental health services and substance use disorder, unfortunately less for basic primary care services. So what we need to be able to do is find funding that supports treating this population as a sort of vulnerable, marginalized population in society to overcome some of these barriers to access. Like, even these low cost sliding scale fees are still too much for many people who just literally don't have anything when they come out.
Jessica, it sounds like you've gotten a lot of moral support from the program, and it's helped you stay focused, but I wonder what sort of medical assistance and other kinds of need did you have? Substance abuse, rehab, the therapy, that sort of thing? Any of that?
I lost my mother when my son was 7 days old, and I suffered from postpartum, also PTSD. So those things were very hard to overcome. I'm still working on that. It's an everyday self-help for myself that I have to do to continue to move on with my life. And people like Tommy that get involved is really the stepping stone that has changed my life. I don't have support, and Tommy has just been fantastic, exactly what I needed, and he goes over and beyond to make sure that I get what I need.
Evan, what about expanding this? Is there a way to expand it? Does it scale, as they like to say in the business world?
Yes, and we are very fortunate. The Department of Public Safety, which runs the prison system in North Carolina, is a strong supporter of the FIT program. Nicole Sullivan, who has led the efforts toward improving reentry for folks coming out of the state prison, works closely with us. We actually are just finishing a contract to be able to hire 3 more community health workers this year, 1 to work in Wake County, 2 to work in Mecklenburg, and then in the following year to be an additional 2 as well, and reaching out to many different funders, statewide organizations, different stakeholders, so we can scale this up. But I've also gotten a lot of support from the North Carolina Community Health Center Association.
It's interesting to see, too, how you fit and how you connect in the various counties. In Orange and Durham, it seems like you're actually integrated in the county health system, but you could also operate as a standalone, sort of to be referred to, kind of a reference agency.
Yeah, I mean, our strategy for scaling up, Frank, is to figure out, depending what community and who are the stakeholders that are the most interested in supporting a program like this? And in certain places in the state, it will be the health departments. In other places, it might be the federally qualified health centers. Or in Charlotte, for instance, it's the Center for Community Transitions that's going to be hiring our community health worker. And they've done an enormous amount of work under Myra Clark with reentry over the past 30 years. So, you know, I think the most important thing is that we are able to identify the people most invested in helping this population, then try to partner with them and get their clients into health services as well.
I've only got about 30 seconds left, but is there any value in, and do you sort of work with the prisons pre-release to figure out what's headed your way?
That is exactly where we're going. So working with DPS, we are going to have access to folks in, let's say, Wake Correctional, Orange Correctional prior to release. So Tommy can create this rapport before people come out, because their most vulnerable time really isn't, especially for drug overdose, is in that first few weeks post-release. So that's one of our goals in the very near future, is to actually start getting behind the walls.
Evan Ashkin is a professor of family medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and director of the Formerly Incarcerated Transition Program. Jessica Romine is currently enrolled in the program. Tommy Green is a community health worker for Orange County Health Department, and Jessica's community health worker at the FIT program. And I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Frank. You can find out more about it at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we talk about judgment, courage, heartbreak, and change with author Silas House. It's all part of his new novel, Southernmost. We'll talk about it next on The State of Things.